Welcome to Eagle Eye.
What a break from Manoa.
Interviewing your favorite USA Eagles around the globe.
Tony Limbaugh into the 22.
Now, here's your host, Bill Baker.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Eagle-Eyed Rugby Podcast. Today I have USA Sevens men's head coach, Mike Friday. Now, when I do these interviews with someone like Mike and with news breaking every day, I'm worried that when I recorded this just last week, that much of what we talked about could have changed by now. Like the Tokyo Olympics, which as of now is still due to start in less than 3 months. Of course, that was a big part of our conversation, as well as the team's preparations for the Olympic Games. Mike and I also go into depth about Perry Baker's status and what it means to the team to have someone like Nate Ebner back in the mix. And also, what impact could USA Sevens have on rugby as a whole in America, especially if the team medals? Here I am with Mike. I don't know, probably a busy man. I don't know.
I'm in quarantine at the moment, so no.
Well, that's my question for you. How was your trip over to the UK?
It's so far. I've got home, and I've seen the inside of my house, and I've seen my garden. It's always nice to have the opportunity to get back and see family. I haven't managed that as of yet. I'm day 4, I think, or 5 on quarantine. I'm not sure. So I've got another 4 or 5 days of self quarantine at home to do. And then I can see people in the world. But it has made traveling back and forth much more of a challenge. And, you know, my blocks of time with the lads and everything we're doing has been as long as 12 weeks, which they're not thankful for. And then most of them have been kind of 5 or 6 weeks. And this last block has been a 6 week block, and they well and truly have earned their week off.
Nice. So is this a trip, personal reasons, family?
Yeah, just to catch up with my sons. My eldest son is 18 next Monday. Wow. So he officially becomes a man, apparently, what he tells me. And you know, my youngest is 14. So, yeah, catch up a bit of time with them. And with the nature of the way that the next part of our program is unfolding, the plan being that a squad of 14 lads from the squad will be coming across to the UK, it just aligned to allow me to come a week or so earlier.
I'll step back just a little bit now. You know, we're roughly 3 months away from the Olympics, fingers crossed. What have been the preparations leading up to? Actually, what do the preparations look like leading up to the games next few months?
Yeah, I mean, we're into the home straight now. And, you know, we've been in a lot of uncharted water these last 12 months. And we've certainly had to learn on our feet. We've had to adapt. We've had to deal with a lot of uncertainty. And I'll be perfectly honest, we haven't got it all right. That's for sure. We've made mistakes, but that's the important thing about when those mistakes happen is that you do lift your head, you do reflect, and we try and get back on to where we need to be. I think, you know, we can probably talk about a few of the bits and pieces that have gone on in the last 12 months, which have impacted us and where we've had lessons learned. But we're now, as a squad, we're moving quite nicely towards Tokyo. In circa, I think it's 95 days or 94 or whatever. And the squad now needs some more competition, not just playing within itself, but external competition, because playing this game, you need to see the different pictures that oppositions provide. It becomes very stagnant if you continually play against yourself, because that's not the real world. That's not where games are won and lost in the heat of the moment. It's the unpredictability and how you adapt to the unpredictability, which is critical. So the next period of the month is physically we're moving in the right direction. Hopefully we'll be able to maintain that routine and consistency that all professional athletes like. And we can then get some quality external competition to give us the best chance to be as ready as we can be for the big dance in Tokyo in July.
You know, 15 sides have been playing, I wouldn't say the majority of the world, but, you know, the Six Nations and such, they're getting in minutes, they're getting in playing time. But in sevens has been completely the opposite. You know, other than maybe the Madrid sevens or whatever, there really hasn't been a lot of sevens going on and inter-squad scrimmages, let's say. You know, does that kind of level the playing field going into the games for other nations as well? Do others that may not, I don't know, on paper have a chance to beat, say, Fiji or USA, does that give them maybe a better chance?
It certainly makes it far more unpredictable. And it was already insanely unpredictable as it was. So I think it's an interesting one because I think, you know, dependent on what type of nation you are, if you're a mature rugby nation, you know, the likes of South Africa, you've got a lot of internal resources, a lot of playing depth. You can create a lot of the different types of opposition because you have such a vast bandwidth of rugby EQ within your own country. So, you know, the reality is in, say, somewhere like South Africa, where they have potentially closed up shop and are dealing with everything from within, they are able to put out different pictures because they have the physical athletes that can play a very direct power game, similar to some of the teams. And they've also got a lot of players that can play a very high tempo, fast with footwork game, which is akin to a number of other teams. So, you know, nations such as New Zealand, South Africa, you know, that they've got a great playing resource that will potentially give them a competitive advantage, I would probably say. Then you look at Fiji, who just have, you know, the biggest resource in the world in terms of the number of quality sevens athletes that they have that play in the game. And then you've got, you know, like you said, you've got the rugby savvy nations of Australia and the likes of Team GB. So it's an interesting one for us as that kind of nation that's kind of broken the top table and are recognised as a top four consistently as one of those teams over the last 4 or 5 years. It's a different challenge for us because our rugby talent depth still needs work. You know, we don't have the depth that we require. We don't have the history in the game, so we are still relatively new to it and novices as we try and maintain and build our kind of place at the top table. But I think it's been interesting watching the likes of Argentina, who have been able to take full advantage of all the regional tournaments that have happened, and how sharp and how cohesive they look as a group. And you've got nations such as Kenya, you know, who've got a good rugby tradition in sevens, who are probably better equipped right now to deal with the pandemic than anybody else, because life for them doesn't really change, right? They've had to deal with a lot of hardship before the pandemic, and the pandemic is an adjustment for them, but they're probably better at that, making those types of adjustments than some of the other nations. So it's interesting. I think everybody will be undercooked coming into the Olympics. And I think ultimately the team that is the best conditioned and able to adapt to the heat requirements of Tokyo will have the best opportunity. There will be mistakes. It's whether those other teams can capitalize on it. So it will certainly be an interesting affair. And all we can try and do, and all every other team is trying to do, is kind of plan for as many of those inconsistencies as you can, so that you're ready for them, because you don't know when they're going to happen, but you know they probably will happen.
So, Mike, looking back at the last year since COVID started really shutting down the world, how has that changed, you know, your ability to scout or evaluate players that may not be in your 14 traveling over to Europe? You know, how has that changed for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's been insanely frustrating. You know, we lost 6 months of the World Series. We lost 6 months of a daily training environment. But more importantly, I lost the CRCs. More importantly, I lost the college championships. More importantly, I lost the club sevens. All of these great events that happen across the United States, which, you know, is the life and blood of trying to find the next group of sevens players. And we are fortunate in the residency squad we have at the moment. We're probably always going to be the residency squad for the Olympic years. But the challenge that we have in the States is the conveyor belt. You know, we need to keep the conveyor belt moving. We need to keep creating opportunities for people to put their hands up and get spotted and to have the opportunity to play and develop their talents, because ultimately you've got to develop through playing. You know, you can run the fastest 40, you can jump the highest, you can give me the best fitness score you like. You know, all of those kind of KPIs that are akin to a lot of the super sports, but ultimately I want eyeballs on you and see whether you can play the game. So I think those opportunities to play has hurt us. And the sooner we can get back to some form of normality at age grade level, but more importantly, also the club level, to allow us to see the talent that the United States have and for the opportunity for those players to show and perform themselves so they can continue developing. It's been tough. I mean, we're hopeful that we'll see a little bit over the summer. There's talk of a college sevens. There's also, I'm hearing strong possibilities that Glendale will happen. And then there are talk of some other potential sevens tournaments taking place in September, which would be great domestically for the USA and provide real opportunities for us to start finding the next group to complement those that will continue after Tokyo.
So other than the group who are going over to Europe soon, are there any names that you can share or any other players out there you think are kind of on the bubble that you may have seen back in the, you know, early December or just over this past year? Anyone out there that we should be looking out for?
Yeah, there's some new guys that are with us that have been with us since the summer. So obviously Malachi Esdale is with us. Harley Wheeler is back with us from Rugby Atlanta. Jacob Lakina, who you would have seen at both the CRCs, but also for WCAP at Glendale. And then, you know, we've got Gavin Damore Morrison, who excelled last year at the club nationals. 2 years ago it was now. Blimey. 2 years ago at the club nationals. And has been working with us. You know, we maintain and keep an eye on DeMonte Noble, who's just now starting to make a few little waves in Old Glory in the MLR. So they're the young guys that are coming through, but we've also got those guys that are establishing themselves, you know, the likes of Joe Schroeder, Maceo Brown, Marcus Topola. Christian Dyer is another guy that has joined us, who was the Cal player, who is outstanding. He was selected to go to the Pan Am Games, but did his ACL kind of 2 or 3 weeks before, so couldn't, but has worked tirelessly well to get himself back fit. And he's moving a few trees in training at the moment, and it's good to see. So we've got a group that are coming through, and you know we've also got two young playmakers in Naima Fualau and Tala Talapusi, who are 20 and 21, who've been with us for about 3 years now. But to be a tempo playmaker takes a number of years to perfect your trade and to learn your trade, and you know we have got obviously one of the best in the world in Fualau Nua. But, you know, people forget Fualau was in his mid-20s before he made his debut on the world circuit. and he is a timeless old man. And, again, working tirelessly well to try and give himself an opportunity to be fit for the Olympics after that horrific injury 2 years ago. And the postponement has given him a chance to make that. Whether he makes that or not, we will see. But, you know, you can see that the foundations of ensuring that we have that continuity is in place. But the reality is, for a country of our size, we should have far more players to pick and choose from than we currently have. And we've got to do a better job at nurturing that investment and that excitement and that awareness of our game at the high school level so that it complements those kind of super sports.
And speaking of older players, how's Perry doing? Any update on him?
Yeah, Perry's going great. I mean, it's real positive. Well, it wasn't positive when it happened in Madrid. You know, Perry is out of his boot. He's running on the Ultra G at nearly 100% body weight. So he is 5-6 weeks in. He's well and truly on course. And you will see Perry running around properly probably in the next 4 to 6 weeks, which is fantastic news for us. And he's been working insanely hard off the, you know, away on the training ground. And, you know, if you probably watch him on Instagram, you'll see he doesn't mind getting his top off and showing the world that His upper body's looking good. I'm not so sure about his legs at the moment, but he's never had the biggest legs, has he? So he's in a good place, and he's looking forward to the challenge of playing rugby again.
And then someone maybe just as older, if not older, you know, whether he makes the Olympic squad or not, I mean, what's the importance on the team to have a guy like Nate Ebner back into the mix?
Yeah, I mean, what can you say about this guy? You know, yes, he's a phenomenal athlete. Yes, he's done exceptionally well in the NFL. But, you know, Nate won't mind me saying this. Means nothing to me in terms of what he does in the NFL unless he can't do it on a rugby pitch. And, you know, rugby is Nate's love. He's a rugby player who succeeded in the NFL. He's not a footballer coming to play rugby. It's very much the other way around. And the thing about Nate is he has this eye of the tiger when it comes to competition. Oh, yeah. He's fearless about competing. And when I say he's fearless about embracing competition, he's fearless about putting himself in a position to compete, i.e., some athletes are reticent of competing in case they miss out on the big event. Nate's whole mindset is, I'm going to compete to give myself the best opportunity to be at the main event. And if I fall short trying to compete, then I'm happy. And you know, the way that he delivers that and the way he approaches his work, the way he approaches the way he conducts himself off the pitch or how he treats other people, it's fantastic. You know, he's a great guy to have around the training ground. And that's the most important to me. He's a humble, hardworking bloke who knows where he came from, never forgets that, and has a real grounding that is of huge benefit to our squad. And with all the success he's achieved, he still is the same person and works just as hard every day. And for young men to see that, and for aspiring men, that's important. But it's just as important for those senior guys in our squad who, you know, when you've been with us for 5 or 6 years, it can become a little bit kind of old hat routine. Never forget how kind of special these moments are because you're a long time retired. And Nate certainly brings that perspective and that grounded, it's all about today, to the environment.
Well, I think the writing was on the wall that Nate was coming back at some point early December during the Golden Eagles because Madison Hughes had the Nate Ebner haircut going on. The whole
It's still going. I think he had to get rid of the beard because I think Dawn put her foot down. But the hair is still well and truly there. I mean, we've even seen the top knot from Madison now, which, I mean, my mum's gone mental. She's like, you've got to talk to Madison about getting his haircut. I said, well, I'm not talking to Madison about his haircut. So,
not in your coaching duties, but
no.
So, as a coach, I'm gonna pick your brain here for a second. So, having again with Nate Ebner, do you approach him any differently than the rest of the players because he has that NFL pedigree, you know, championship, this kind of stuff? Is any difference at all?
And being candid, not for Nate. Nate doesn't want any special treatment. And to be fair, like I said, I mean. It is what it is, right? He's a good bloke first and foremost. And to be in our environment, you've got to be a good man. And he knows the score. He's got to deliver as a rugby player. And he wouldn't have it any other way. And that's exactly what he did when he came back in 2016. He left it late, but he had to get that knowledge that was at the back of his head to the front of his head. And he wasn't quite ready for what it was physically he was going to have to endure. So that was a bit of a shock for him, which he had to adjust. He knew coming into this one what the physical adjustments were and what he had to do. So he was better equipped for that. He's now got to, you know, work tirelessly hard to bring that stuff from the back of his head to the front. And then you've got that insane competitive edge that he has that will drive him on and drive everybody else on. And ultimately he said, if I deserve to be there, I'll be there. If I don't, I won't. And that's exactly how our conversations have and have always gone. He's a dream to work with, and he's a good guy.
Okay, for you as a coach, how important is it for you to get to know your players more on a personal level? Not necessarily their skill set, but you know their character. Get to know the player as themselves.
Well, I think it's fundamental. I think if you want a man to trust you, then you've got to earn that right. You've got to earn that respect. You've got to earn that trust. And the only way that you can earn that is to understand them, and to listen to them and to build a relationship with them. And for me, coaching, a big part of coaching is you have to emotionally invest in your players, and you have to mold yourself around them, not expect them to mold around you. Now, the reality of that is that you're going to get some heartbreak there because your players are like sons and sometimes your sons let you down. And that's just how it is. And that's the relationship. But, you know, for me, I make every effort to understand them on a personal level and what makes them tick, understand their why, understand their concerns, on and off the pitch, to help me build a relationship so they can be honest with me and be authentic so that I can help them maximize their potential, not just as a rugby player, but as a person. I see my role as, you know, having made a number of mistakes like everybody else when you're kind of going through life, is that you've got to help and pass those things on and try and guide these young men through their journey. So it's hugely important for me. I don't pay lip service to trying to improve the man. I think that's the most important piece. Being authentic, being honest, and you know, you've got to understand how to communicate with each of them, and each of them is different. But you've also got to be prepared to have the hard conversations as well as the nice conversations. But you can deliver those hard conversations in a number of ways, dependent on who they are and how they best respond. So, yes, it's a huge thing for me when it comes to coaching.
So earlier this month, you wrote, players need enjoyment too. Yeah. There's a difference between enjoyment and fun. Explain that.
Yeah, look, again, the boys, if the boys listen to this, they're going to hang me out to dry, probably. So they want fun. They think fun. And fun for them is they get to play games, they get to play soccer, they get to do this. And I'm like, lads, you can do all of that, but you can do that on your time. You're not going to do that on our coaching time. When we come to work, we come to work. Now, you can have enjoyment, but there's a difference between enjoyment and fun. Now, you know, you need to enjoy and understand your why, because you do a vocational job which you're passionate about. So if you're passionate about something, then ultimately it should be fun anyway. But there's a misunderstanding between the meaning of fun and enjoyment. For me, enjoying is enjoying your work, but working hard and finding the moments within that are fun. So, you know, that's what I talk about, you know, a time and a place for a bit of banter, time and a place for the practical jokes, you know, giving an environment off the pitch in the locker room where everybody can be themselves, because that's enjoyable and that's the vibrancy that we need. There are also little areas within kind of coaching for me, which, you know, if they're not a massive impact on me or the environment, then just because it might not be something that I enjoy or like, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't do it. And, you know, I used the example around the music, is the fact that every time we train, they have their music box out there and it's playing all sorts of music and loud. Now, I was brought up in a time where we didn't have that. And so your immediate thing is, well, if we didn't have that, that's how it always is, rather than, well, actually, if it makes them perform better and it doesn't really affect the environment or the culture or the standards, then why can't we do it differently? So I think it's the evolution of those types of things which are important. What I am dead set against is, I tell you what, lads, let's just play soccer today. Why? Because that's what you want to do. And it's like, well, no, we still have a job to do. Our job is still to get better. Our job is still to represent the nation in the best way we can. And we have a responsibility to do that. And that should be enjoyment enough. So it's that balance, really. And it's not science, it is art, because there are times where you would come into training and they might just need something. So you do have to judge the emotional feel of the group and where we are. And sometimes we'll take a conscious decision, but it's got to be conscious. It can't be a knee jerk or anything like that, just because they want it. And that hence the quote that if you want to be liked by everyone, then, you know, buy them ice cream the whole time. You know what I mean? There's sometimes everyone's parents have said, no, you're not having ice cream today. And there's the initial tantrum, but then they actually cherish the ice cream when you do get it every now and then. So, you know, that's kind of my feel and my approach on those types of things. And when that did come out, the boys, they were into me.
So. Well, two more questions for you, Mike. You know, speaking of these games or the treats that the players like to do with each other or team building or something that you introduce as well. So putting your thinking cap for a second, has there been anything that, you know, even just with the USA team or even before that, that you try to implement with them, you want them to do something or they have an idea for team building and both of you go, you want to do what? You know, is that anything ring a bell?
That you can share? I mean, I won't. You can guess what their best form of team building is. and to be fair, they're very good at it. But that's why we can only ever do it every now and then. I wouldn't say not really. I think probably the ones we undertook them, taking them with the special forces. The Navy SEALs took them out for 2 or 3 days. This is back before, I think this is back before 2016 Rio, or maybe it was just after. For 2017, and they certainly looked at me like that bemused dog does, as if they're like, "You what? We're doing what?" Because literally, they had to come in for a late evening weight session, which was odd in itself, and then the Navy SEALs just arrived and swooped them off. And let's just say that there was a few characters that were not up for that because their phones were not going to be any use, which is in itself criminal. For these boys, if they're not allowed to have internet or Wi-Fi for more than 12 hours, and it was an interesting journey for them over the 3 days, and they all came through it and thought better of it and enjoyed it when they look back and they reflect. But at the time, I don't think they saw it that way, and certainly it took some of them a little longer than others. We had one potential deserter after night one, but he returned for the morning of day two. So it was, you know, those little kind of incidents and stories. But I think that's probably the one where they've looked at me like the bemused dog, as if to say, you know, you what is this all about? But yeah no, generally there's a bit of consensus really in terms of what they want to do and so forth. And you know, it's pretty run of the mill because I think it's all about enjoying each other's company and having fun with one another and making yourself vulnerable to having that fun. So, and that's just as important as a coach. You've got to be prepared to be the butt of the joke and you've got to engage and embrace that. We used to have this other game where you play roll the dice if there's some sort of mishap or, and one of the things was dizzy bat. So I got done on a completely ridiculous charge, but nonetheless, it's like, well, if you're in, you're in. I rolled the dice. I had to do dizzy bat, and I ended up knackering the ligaments in my thumb, which means I couldn't do things for like 2 months. But it was immensely enjoyable for the boys. So we kind of go with the flow, and I think that's important. Everybody's on a level when you're doing this. You can't all of a sudden just rise yourself above that. That to me doesn't feel right.
And finally, Mike, you know, here in the States, like me growing up playing rugby in college or club, whatever, very little pathway to actually work in the sport, let's say. But now you've seen that more and more, especially with MLR, USA Rugby, you know, yourself doing sevens, head coach and that kind of thing. Even when you were playing or earlier, before that, could you ever imagine that this is your job? And because you mentioned work earlier, I mean, this is not a job. Right.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, it's not a job, really, honestly. I mean, we're very fortunate. But, you know, I sometimes we lose perspective on that. And we feel it is a job because sometimes there's some tough days. You know, there's lots of parts of my job which are not that enjoyable. But you take that because of the enjoyable bits. And that's no different to any kind of person's job or role. But, you know, when I first started playing, I didn't think rugby would be professional. And I was part of that crew that went from being amateur players to professional players. But I always thought I'd finish playing and go back into the world of property. And I did. And I flitted between the two. And it was only when I became head coach of the United States that I left corporate world and solely went into coaching. So I think, you know, we are very fortunate. And I think with that comes a heavy responsibility. And I certainly feel that in the United States, because we are playing catch up and we do have an immense talent pool to draw on. Yes, we need to unlock the high school part of it, because I think that's the key to unlocking rugby as a sport to grow to the capability of what we could do. But a large piece of that is educating and mentoring the next group of coaches as well as players. And that's what we're doing in the sevens, is the fact that a large group of us, we're part of our CARE program, which is Career Advancement Rugby Enhancement, is we're educating and mentoring them to become coaches, to pass on the game, to be those role models, to be those pioneers for the next group, so that little Johnny aspires to be the next Falau, the next Danny, the next Madison, the next Perry, the next Carlin. So, you know, so that then we're spreading that rugby sevens ecosystem into the high school. So the players, you know, the young boys and the young girls have got choices to complement with those traditional super sports, because not everybody can be Tom Brady or Steph Curry, right? Very, very few. But there's a lot of them that could, if they couldn't be that, could be an Olympian and play for their country and try and win a medal. So it's about capturing the imagination and the heart, but also I see my role and our role as the USA Men's Sevens to be those pioneers to try and grow the game and pass on the knowledge and the learning to provide the opportunities for the next generation. You know, that's kind of what I see as the grail. The challenge is the United States is huge. and that's the challenge. I think ultimately we've got to be smart as USA Rugby and focus on those hotbeds and grow those ecosystems, and then hope that we can spread and build that momentum. But I say to the boys, there's a lot of pressure on us and the girls, because it'll be interesting to see what a medal would do for this game in America.
Well, that's brilliant, Mike. Thank you so much for giving me your time. I'm still eagerly awaiting that invite for the 225-pound over division.
I am waiting for that RSD score.
Yeah. I'll get it to you. But thank you. I really do appreciate this. Good conversation. And I know myself personally and all the USA Rugby fans, of course, are dying to see you guys back on the pitch soon.
Thank you. Cheers, Bill. Lovely. Thank you for having me on.